Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Slash Filmcast. I'm David Chen and with me are...
Devendra Hardwar.
And Jeff Cannata.
Welcome to the show, everyone. If you want to find more episodes of this podcast, you can go to slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Today we got a bunch of what we've been watching to talk with you about. And then we are going to move into an in-depth review. This week we'll be discussing Knives Out, the new Rian Johnson whodunit. It's called a Rian Johnson, a whodunit by Rian Johnson, which is, you know, it's going to be like his version of a Spike Lee joint is kind of how I perceive it, right? Like,
sure.
A way of referring to his own movies that's not just a film. I think whodunit's pretty good. Jeff, what do you think? You enjoy wordplay. What do you think of whodunit as a...
whodunit?
It's a few...
Yeah, I like a whodunit. It's a whodunit, yeah. A parlor mystery.
It's a few syllables, definitely. It's quite a mouthful, but I think it could catch on. Certainly, the box office seems to be good. Movie made over $40 million in its opening holiday weekend, which I think outpaced expectations by quite a bit. So I'm actually really happy that a movie that is A, made by Rian Johnson, B, not based on a pre-existing property, and C, is geared towards adults with an amazing cast, is able to still make a lot of money. I think that's very encouraging in this day and age.
Yeah, but I think it was a little gratuitous that Chris Evans is in the Captain America costume the entire movie.
It is weird. It is weird. I agree with you about that. Well, Jeff Cannata, you were not here on the podcast last week
for
the Jojo Rabbit episode.
That's right.
And Jojo Rabbit, a movie I think you would actually appreciate. Both Devendra and I
can't wait to watch it.
I really liked it. But we had a little After Dark last week where we talked about the Tesla Cybertruck. And we both expressed a desire. We were like, oh man, it's too bad Jeff's not here, because we would love to hear what his opinion on it was.
Because I'm all about that Cybertruck.
Yeah, so you are a fan of it? Like, what is your...
Yes, I love it.
You love... Like, what do you like about it? Because to many people, it looks monstrous.
Yeah.
I understand
my
that.
First impression, by the way, was burn it with fire, send it to hell, basically.
I don't... I mean, I guess I get that. I guess people genuinely think it is ugly. And the aesthetic is bold, to say the least.
Yeah.
Anything that is that different is going to be polarizing, and I understand that. And so I have to acknowledge that there are people on both poles, right? If it's polarizing, there's got to be two poles. But I'm on that pole that says, yeah, dude, go for it. Go for it. I love just the pure audacity of making something that doesn't look like everything else, actually trying something different and new and pushing things forward, actually shooting for the moon and going, yeah, let's do it. Let's introduce something that doesn't, that is a leap forward, isn't just incremental, is a leap. And maybe you don't think it's forward. Maybe you think it's sideways or backwards.
Maybe it's another direction. Yeah.
But it is another direction. It is somebody saying, why can't cars look like a crazy sci-fi movie from the 80s? Why not? We can do whatever we want. We're a car company that has no baggage. It has no vestiges of a, you know, 60, 80, 100 year history. We can do anything. So let's completely rethink what this is and just be bold, be provocative, and make something that's genuinely new. It looks like nothing else out there, and it is genuinely new. It is It is engineered in a different way. It is it performs in a different way. It is genuinely new. And that, to me, I love that in any – I love people taking big swings, and this is a huge swing. Now, I have to say, I watched live that presentation, and oh my goodness, that was a singular viewing experience. Watching it live.
Truly, literally ripped out of HBO Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I mean, if you wrote that, people would be like, that's just too implausible.
It's just silly. It would never happen.
Yeah. It would never happen. I mean, they would make sure that the windows would not break. And then if they did break, he wouldn't have to just stand there for the rest of the
presentation. At the beginning of your show. Yeah.
And the next video package, literally the next video package is all the stuff that we threw at the window and it didn't break. And no producer went
metal balls before. Yeah,
there was no producer who went, let's skip that package. Let's skip that video package. Move to the next thing. I mean, set aside the fact that Elon is an atrocious public speaker. He is just embarrassingly awkward.
I mean, I would say, you know, if I'm being charitable, Jeff, I would say that he relies on the products to speak for themselves.
Yes.
Right.
No,
like
he
basically doesn't. Like, I don't need to do any preparation, because here's the thing.
He has things to say.
You know, I think we all are on the same page about this. Like, we all appreciate the art of a really well delivered corporate presentation. Having been, like, as someone who has been a person who has helped people prepare these things, I have been.
Sure.
And Devendra, you have been on the side of people who've been covering them. As have you, Jeff.
I've done them.
Yeah, I know. We all have
to
been
be the
on,
guy
like,
on stage.
We all have been on one or both sides of this equation before, and so we all appreciate what a very polished, very well delivered presentation is. And that is not it.
No.
What
basically
Tesla
whenever
is.
He speaks for any presentation, but
it definitely looks like he does not want to be there. And someone, or actually multiple someones, have put a lot of work into building these video packages, and he introduces them like, let's just get through this. Let's just see the next thing. And this is a thing we put together. And it's like dozens of man hours went into each of those things. You know, somebody stayed up late editing it, trying to make them have the biggest impact. And the CEO just completely undercuts it at the literally the only time it will be viewed by anyone, you know?
Sounds like a healthy work environment. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, he doesn't seem to want to be there. And if he was truly letting the product speak for itself, it would be awesome. He could just walk out on stage and go, hi, I'm Elon Musk.
We no made words.
Shoot. We made the Cybertruck. Here it is, you know, but no, there's 20 minutes of preamble and it's not great. And it looks like he didn't, you know, Dave, you set this up by saying we have all been on multiple sides of this thing.
Yeah.
So we all know, and I'm sure many people listening are very well aware, these things are meticulously planned.
Yeah.
Down to the second. They are rehearsed. There is not one of these that you see where the people on stage haven't gone through every beat of what they're doing multiple times. It is a choreographed, rehearsed, every exchange on stage, everyone knows what question is coming at them. Everyone knows what answer they're going to say. There is nothing left to chance, except for the fact that it looks like Elon has no idea what's happening around him. It looks like he did not participate in any rehearsal process whatsoever and couldn't have cared less about the rehearsal process, even though he's the central figure in this drama. Having said all that, where the presentation itself was, I hate it when people say cringe or excruciating when they talk about watching things, because I just think that's such a tired expression. But boy, if anything ever earned it, it would be this presentation, because just sitting there watching the rest of it with that shattered – when the guy throws the ball at the first window and it breaks and you're like, oh my God, what are they going to do next? And then the guy goes – do you want me to throw it at the back window? And Elon's like, sure. And then that one breaks too. You're just like, oh, guys.
Doesn't he also like mutter holy shit like as the first one happened too?
So, he does, you know. At least
he said, oh, my effing God was the was.
Oh,
the
my effing God.
Yeah. And he goes, at least it didn't go through. That's something.
So those shatterproof windows will be really helpful, by the way, when you are stuck underwater and the water pressure makes it so that you can't open your doors and you will die inside that Cybertruck. It's great.
We'll drive the Cybertruck into the water, man.
So, Jeff, I think what I'm hearing from you is, first of all, Devendra, very dark. Secondly, Jeff, I think what I'm hearing from you is you love the product, weren't a big fan of the presentation.
Yes, but nobody's going to remember the presentation in 2 years when this thing comes out. I mean, maybe with a chuckle. But
the big question, though, Jeff, have you pre-ordered this thing?
Oh, dude, if it wasn't for my wife ripping the phone out of my hand,
well, Jeff, don't you already own a Tesla as well?
Yeah.
I do. I have the Model 3.
What do you think of it?
I adore it. I'm not a car guy. I've never loved a car before, but I love my Model 3. I love it because it doesn't feel like a car. It feels like a computer. And I love computers. I'm a tech guy at heart and always have been.
Is your wife a fan of the Model 3?
She was not until we got it. And now she loves it and doesn't want to drive her car.
All right. Well, yeah. There you go. Well,
it's a con. Dude, it is. I love the car. I love everything about it. I love the fact that I wake up some mornings and get into it and it can do new things now. That's amazing. I like that it can drive me home. I like that, you know, it can. I've never been in a car. I've never driven a car that can just get off the line like this thing, and I can just zip around people, and there's always more power to be had. So if I'm on this freeway and I need to go a little faster, yeah, it could do that. It's great. Now, I begged my wife to let me get the Cybertruck for no reason. There's no usefulness in my life to have a pickup truck. Like, there's no you. And I've never wanted a pickup truck before. And so she was very sensible and said, no, we're not getting that. Also, she thinks it's fugly. But
it is very fugly. It looks cool, like Elon Musk scribbled like the aerodynamic drawing you'd get from like a test chamber on a napkin. It was just like, here, make this.
It's basically so cool, dude. It's so cool. And it's going to be there's so many, and 147,000 pre-orders already. I know at least three people that I'm friends with that pre-ordered it. Who knows if they actually buy it, right? It's, you know, 2 years away.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to ride in one. I think I can't wait to, you know, not be able to get out in the underwater. It's going to be so great. But
do you know why cars have crumple zones, Jeff? Like,
it's got to have crumple zones,
that thing,
right? It has to.
It's got to, but
by law.
They also made a really big deal of it having stainless steel, like basically the entire outer shell is stainless steel. So yeah, it better crumple, because otherwise you will be the ones crumpling.
Everyone you run into will be the one. You'll just drive over them like some sort of, you know, post-apocalyptic nightmare car. But it also doesn't have rear view mirrors, and you can't sell cars in most states without rear view mirrors. So, you know, there are changes coming.
They have some stuff to work on. Well, so I just wanted to get the countervailing point of view on the Cybertruck. And I think we've spent enough time on that now.
But no more Cybertruck.
Yeah, Dave, you're on team. It's garbage.
I think there are a bunch of people who will get a lot of utility out of it. So it's not like I think like it's not good for anyone or anything, but like it definitely doesn't meet any of my needs. Certainly as somebody who lives in a city right now, it's not.
That doesn't meet any of my needs.
You just want to have it.
Does this thing have a room for two car seats? No, but I will still want it.
All right. Well, that's fair enough. I'm more of a compact car kind of guy. So I'd be Tesla Model 3 would be something I'd buy before that. But
I highly recommend it.
We'll see.
You can sell your wife on the Model Y, though, Jeff. That thing will be great for kids.
We have been fantasizing about the Model Y for sure. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of things that are excruciating to watch, we need to talk about emails we got in response to what Jeff talked about last week regarding PJ Masks.
This is week before last, actually.
Yeah,
yes.
Week before last. That's right, because you weren't here last week. I have an email from Jordan, the Chenthusiast. I can read about this, Jeff, if that's okay with you, or is there?
Sure, I had one from Sean that I liked, but you go ahead.
Yeah, let me read Jordan. You read John's. We'll both dive in. So Jordan, the Chenthusiast, writes, "I don't usually think about writing in, but
you're,
I couldn't."
You're adopting that full bore. We're going with Chenthusiast.
Jordan, the Chenthusiast. That's right. Yeah.
There were many during the last couple of weeks. I've heard many alternative options for all three of us. In fact.
Any favorites, Jeff? Anyone's come stick to your mind?
Oh man, do you remember any? There were some awesome ones for you. There were so many good ones, and I can't remember what they are now. Anyway,
it must have been really good. Must be really good, Jeff.
Enthusiast is what we're going with.
Anyway, okay. Jordan writes from Atlanta, Georgia. I don't usually think about writing in, but I couldn't help but respond to Jeff's take on the show PJ Masks. I myself am the parent of a 3-year-old son and have been subject to dozens of kids' TV shows. Jeff's main critique was that the essential premise of PJ Masks was a derivative of an already existing Marvel DC stories and felt watered down or borrowed. Truth is, the same can be said for much of modern kids' television. Popular shows like Paw Patrol and Top Wing are both conceptually similar to any Marvel team-up stories, i.e. a group of heroes hanging out in their high-tech headquarters until summoned by acts of villainy. Avengers or Justice League, anyone? There's also shows like Super Wings, Blaze, and the Monster Machines, and Teo the Little Bus that are all of a similar premise. The protagonists are vehicles with faces, and that often feels like elements from Transformers or Pixar's Car were used. In addition to the heavily inspired programming, let's not forget multiple reboots or continuations of already existing film and TV properties. Garfield, Boss Baby, Lego, Trolls, Dr. Seuss, the list goes on. Scroll through Netflix, and you'll find that many of these newer programs have multiple seasons each. Anyway, Jordan goes on, but he's basically saying, Jeff, get over it. Tons of stuff is derivative. That's basically all kids' television. What do you think about Jordan's email?
Well, to be fair, I got a lot of feedback that was, Jeff, get over it. So, you know. I understand.
But you're used to that. So.
Yeah, I'm used to that. It's kind of a bulk of my responses that I get. But to be fair, I think he kind of misses the point of what I was saying. Yes, I was saying it was derivative, but I was saying it's derivative and also doesn't have any internal logic that seems to make any sense. And I would point out, I haven't watched all of the references that he cites. I have watched Super Wings, which is one of the ones he referenced. Super Wings is a show about anthropomorphized trucks and planes and cars of all kinds. And that show has an internal logic. They have a headquarters where they get mail, and that mail has to go all around the world. So they Super Wings their way around the world and deliver the mail. And then they meet a kid in another country, and they learn about that country while they're there, and invariably help the kid out of some predicament that the kid has gotten himself in or herself into. There's an internal logic to that. Yes, you have to grant the fact that there are anthropomorphized cars and planes, but once you do that, you're good to go. Like, the show maintains an internal logic. That's all I'm asking for. PJ Masks, while I'll acknowledge yet again, is not bad. It's very watchable, actually pretty well made, much worse kids programming. I want to understand the internal logic. In fact, one of the things I didn't bring up a couple weeks ago when we talked about it is one of the biggest problems I have. Is the title supposed to be a play on TJ Maxx?
TJ Maxx, the clothing store?
You gotta get those kids in there. Yeah.
It's like, is that really
Jeff,
the reference?
This program has completely warped your entire way of thinking, is what's happening.
There's no other reason for it's called PJ Masks for a reason, right?
Their masks? Basically?
Yeah, but that's not a phrase that makes any sense, right? It's going to great length to make that particular structure in the title, right? It is trying really hard to do something. PJ Masks.
The show has broken you completely, yeah. Jeff.
That's all right, I'm going to read the email from Sean at the risk of totally beating this dead horse. Sean makes some good points. Sean says, love the show. Been listening for years. I particularly enjoy Jeff's view of shows and films as a parent, as I have a 2.5-year-old. It seems my son enjoys the same things as Jeff's child, from Cat in the Hat to Toy Story 4 to PJ Masks. I tend to view things the same way as Jeff and appreciate his criticisms. I'd like to add to his PJ Masks critique that I think the implied nature of the show is that all the adventures are dreams, which I think allows for all the shenanigans and unexplained tech suits and villains. This could be the same criticism in there about there could be some criticism in there about adult view of superheroes, but I doubt it. Yes, it's very derivative. Its target seems to be toddlers, yada, yada, yada. So he goes on to say that, you know, his kid loved the show and went as Catboy for Halloween. But what about that idea that it's all a dream? Yes, they only have powers at night. Is it all a dream? Is that because the show makes no reference to it all being a dream? And the other weird thing is that they always find a problem in the daytime, and then they go, PJ Masks saves the day. When night comes out, we find our way, or something like that. I can't remember. But and then they put their fists together, and we see a really cool top-down shot of their three fists coming in. By the way, wonder where they got that from. And anyway, top down, three fists coming together, and then it goes, and then it goes, at night, Catboy becomes. But the that happens is literally like 8 hours of daytime that they still have to go through, right? So they found a problem that they're going to deal with. Like, oh no, the museum, they stole the pterodactyl bones from the museum. And then they're like, we got to fix this problem in 7 hours when the sun goes down, I guess. They just wait around, but the show just like makes it seem like in that moment they go, yay, let's do it. But what happens is they put their fists together and then they pull their fists back and then they go about their day for 7 hours until the night comes, because they can't do anything until night comes, which points to Sean's premise that they're all dreams, which may be what it is. It's just a bunch of kids dreaming about being superheroes. Kind of interesting. An interesting take. From Sean. Thank you, Sean.
I think I just had I think I just had a dream that we weren't talking about this anymore. I think I just nodded off and had a micro dream. No, I'm just joking, Jeff. A lot of people did enjoy it, including myself. Your kind of kids' corner. And I look forward to many more Jeff assessments of children's television in the months going forward. But Jeff, let's talk about something that does have internal logic. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, sorry to interrupt you, Dave. I was just going to say that you know, I've said some very controversial things about Star Wars, about Marvel movies, about DC movies. I've never gotten more email than when I talk about kids programming.
Yeah.
So anyway, go ahead. Yeah. Make that awesome.
Honestly, there is a huge hole out there for that. I think, Jeff, there is a demand for you just to do a kids show review thing. And that'll be your life from now on.
Yeah.
Congrats.
I mean, who's to say that's not what the Slash Filmcast will become? Speaking of things that do have internal logic, let's thank our first sponsor, Jeff.
Yes, our first sponsor is Hunt a Killer. Talk about logic. It's all about logic. You know that, if you know anything about me, you know I love tabletop games. I love board games. I love puzzles. I love the idea of sitting around a table and doing something fun with family and friends. And that's what Hunt a Killer is. Hunt a Killer is like participating in a procedural TV show. If you like shows where if you like the movie we're talking about this week, Knives Out, which is basically a whodunit, trying to figure out who's the killer, putting the clues together, following the trail, piecing the puzzle together. That's what Hunt a Killer lets you do. It's a subscription game that gets you off your phone and puts you and your friends and family into an ongoing murder mystery investigation. And that's the coolest part. It's ongoing. It's a subscription. So you get the next segment of the story every month in a box. You open it up. You got cool physical things. You got clues to put together. You got the next stage of the story. You're trying to figure out who this killer is. It gets you talking and having fun together. Everybody loves it. They have over 100,000 members in their online community and 2,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot. My wife and I have been really digging this experience of figuring it out, putting the clues together, and learning the next step of this cool story that they're telling over the course of multiple episodes, just like a TV show. It's nothing quite like Hunt a Killer. Most things are, you know, finite. This is ongoing. It's really, really cool. So right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com and use promo code FILMCAST for 20% off your first box. And they even have gift cards for your holiday shopping. Not to mention, they're throwing in exclusive bundles for the holiday season. So make sure you use promo code FILMCAST, that's FILMCAST, at huntakiller.com for the 20% discount. And to show your support for the show, huntakiller.com, promo code FILMCAST.
All right. Let's get to what we've been watching this week. This week, I want to talk about a few things I've been watching. I saw a documentary called Honeyland. Have any of you heard of this documentary? Honeyland. Anyone?
Only because you tweeted about it.
All right. Well, Jeff, that's very encouraging. It means you're reading my tweets on occasion. But Honeyland is a documentary that takes place in the mountains of Macedonia, and it's about a beekeeper named her name is a little Hadice, I think it's how you pronounce it. So I had heard this is one of the best films of the year. And let me just start by saying it's on video on demand right now. It is one of the best films of the year, in my opinion. It's going to be my top 10. It's extremely good. It is not only a riveting story, but it has resonance with the issues that are facing our world today, specifically around environmental collapse and around how we can take from the earth without depleting the earth. Like, it's very beautifully shot. It's just there's a lot to recommend it. But I, you know, as I subscribe to the Unsullied lifestyle, I knew extremely little about the film before I started watching it, and my wife, as you all know, likes things that are peppy and cheap, and so I was thinking, hey, this documentary about this beekeeper, this has got to be a blast, you know, this has got to be like
nothing bad is happening to bees.
Nothing
right
possibly bad could happen during the course of this movie. Nothing possibly bad. Well, the problem is that. Early on in the film, what essentially is drives like the kind of main plot of the film is that like there's this woman and she's like Hadice, and she's really great at being a beekeeper. You know, she's exceptionally good. You watch her do it; she's ridiculously good at it. It's actually beautiful to see her do it because it's this amazing interaction between humankind and nature that like you rarely see documented like this. And so to watch her do it, it's like watching, I don't know, somebody put on a really great performance on screen. It's like watching someone conduct a symphony or play a concerto really well. You know, it's like, oh.
It's like watching a wasp keeper.
Something like that. Do wasps make honey? I don't think so. Anyway.
I don't know.
It's very, you know, it's very almost moving to see her do her work. And then what happens immediately is a family of vagrants moves in next door, and they're like, hey, we should try the beekeeping thing too. And not only do they, let's say, not do a great job of it and like kind of like mess with her deal, but also there's, I think they have like 5 kids, including a baby. And these children are just feral. They're just like running. Picture like the Florida Project, but like they have even less supervision than that. And they're in like a dangerous environment, you know, because they're basically on the middle of like the desert, right? It's in like this village that has population them. It's just a village, population 7 people, you know, like that's the whole thing.
Where is this movie set, by the way?
In the mountains of Macedonia.
Okay.
Which I think is in Turkey, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's just Macedonia is just a country in southeastern Europe, formerly known as the Republic of Macedonia. So anyway, it's just above Greece, let's say. And so did you ever see that movie Under the Skin? Jonathan Glazer movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes. Loved it.
Jeff, did you see Jonathan Glazer's Under the Skin?
I don't believe so.
It is one of the best films of the decade. And it incredible, bold, original work that is not only really well made, it has something to say. Very much like Honeyland. And there is a scene in Under the Skin where a baby gets left on a beach. Like, just crying and just gets left on a beach to, like, fend for itself. A baby. Like, can't even stand up. And this baby's just crying, it's crying, it's crying, and, like, a character leaves it on the beach. And it is one of the most upsetting things I've seen in a film. And this movie, Honeyland, is, like, 90 minutes of that scene. In the Ooh. Sense that it's, like...
Just a baby covered in bees.
you're seeing freaking these bees everywhere, guys. It's bees.
You're at least getting, like, a cool baby bee beard.
No, it's not that bad, but like, can you imagine like freaking raising bees next to your baby? You know, like what if he's allergic? You know, like
probably find out pretty quick.
Yeah. That's just one of many, atrocities that happens during, like, it's just really upsetting to see this.
And
like,
the documentary filmmakers are like, hey, nothing we can do. Let's just point the camera.
Well, I've read interviews with the filmmakers, and they say actually, like, when you make a film like this, you need to, I think the way they put it, you know, is that you need to choose between being a filmmaker and being a person, you know, is what they said.
That doesn't seem like a good choice to make.
But I don't know. Like, I mean, at the same time,
so
you know,
wait, what did they choose? They just chose.
Yeah, they chose to let things happen. They chose to let things happen.
Yeah.
Like I read later, like they would try to help. Like one of the characters in the movie is quite infirm, and they would like bring that character medicine, and you don't see that on camera or anything. But like they let the interactions and the child rearing or lack thereof kind of play out on its own.
Oh boy.
And you know, it's just a fascinating glimpse of life. That
thanks,
like,
Dave. I will never watch this movie. So
thank you.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Yeah. If you are ever in a position where you're like, I have to choose between my profession and being a person, it's time to rethink things.
Well, you know, I think that's fair, Jeff. But I would also say that I think in making the film the way they did, they are highlighting kind of this way of life. The plight of some of these people, the predicament that many of them find themselves in, and they're doing so in a really powerful and effective way that's bringing potentially more attention to it, and therefore, perhaps in the long term, potentially more good than if they had just like tried to interfere and solve things on their own. So
you're saying you can't make a movie omelet without breaking some babies.
Babies. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Or at least
some
little children.
Like, the honey movie without, yeah.
The little, the I mean, yeah, there's little children, very, very little children that get like injured on screen in this movie. And it's like really, really heartbreaking to watch. So all that said, it's an incredible film and I would recommend it to anyone. So the movie
yeah,
is
no,
funny,
I'm with
like,
Devendra. I'm with Devendra on the I will never be watching this train.
Yeah, that's fine. The movie is Honeyland, and it's available right now on video on demand. It's a great film.
How did your wife like the cheap and breezy selection?
I mean, she was literally upset the entire rest of the night. She's like, yeah. I need like 10 hours to recover from this, and she was not exaggerating. So yeah. That's
a sterling endorsement.
That's
yeah.
That's Honeyland. That's Honeyland.
Another fine example of the Unsullied lifestyle, by the way. Perfection.
Nailed it again. Okay. Also watched a bunch of stuff on Netflix. One of the things I had a chance to watch is Dolomite Is My Name, which is a movie that Devendra Hardwar recommended a few weeks ago. And I have to say, I thought this movie was delightful. It is a tribute to the filmmaking process, the magic of movies, and the value of never giving up, no matter how many times people say no to you. And I will just say that, like, we've had some ups and downs doing this podcast over the course of the last, I don't know, what is it, 11 years now? And there's been many times when like people have said no to us, you know, or said no to me. I've invited people to be guests on the show. They've said no. Or I have like tried to make it on some kind of like top ranking of some, like best podcast, best movie, but whatever. Sometimes we've made it and sometimes we haven't made it. And like what's true of the main character in this movie, Dolomite Is My Name, is that he was told no at many, many turns in his life, and he never gave up. He's just like, you know what? If there, like, you know, it's not even like if God closes a door, he opens a window. First of all, like, that saying is terrible because it just means like God's taking away options, right? Like, it's just like he doesn't close the door without opening window. Okay, but you're still
why
in a
you
worse
so cruel,
off.
God?
You're still fundamentally yeah. in a worse off situation than before the door was closed. But it's kind of like, hey, I'm gonna like if somebody closes the door, he's going to like tunnel through the ground and like find another way to the destination. You know, like that's kind of the philosophy of the main character, Rudy Ray Moore, played by Eddie Murphy, in this movie. And it's a, you know, like podcasting, for many people who podcast, who do it like us, which is like, we're recording it off Skype. We started with pretty much nothing in terms of like support from any major publications or anyone who was like respected. This is prior to when we got acquired by Slash Film, you know, like. I found a lot to resonate with in this movie, Dolan Landing Is My Name, because it's just like, in some ways, like, podcasting is similar to like what he did in this movie, which is like, when like there's so many people to tell you no, or so many opportunities you can miss, and you just gotta, sometimes you just gotta keep going. And that's what he does in this movie, and I find that to be inspiring and encouraging and also heartwarming. And so those are my thoughts on Dolomite Is My Name. Devendra, I don't know if any of that resonates with you, because you've seen the film.
Yeah, no, totally. It's, I mean, I feel like it applies to any creative process, but yes, podcasting, certainly when we were doing it, it was like, nobody knew what it was in 2008, basically, aside from like tech nerds. So doing this movie really proves that there's like a sort of delusion you need to do anything like this that's kind of new and that's kind of like very different than what people are used to. So I think it portrays that really well.
And there's going to be like, basically, like, what I like about it is the idea that there's gatekeepers. Everywhere you go in life is gatekeepers. And what the main character did is he found a way around the gatekeepers. He's like, when the gatekeeper said, no, you can't do this, he's like, you know what? I don't believe you. I don't believe you that I can't do this. And, you know, I like that message. So that's Dolomite Is My Name. It's on Netflix right now. Speaking of things on Netflix, have you heard of the movie Marriage Story?
Oh, yeah.
You know, actually, let me talk about that in a little bit. Let me just say quickly, before I get to Marriage Story, I'll just mention that I saw The Irishman, and that's a movie we'll review on a future episode of the podcast. I had a chance to see it at the Cinerama, so I saw it, like, in the theater.
Nice.
It is a movie that I think deserves to be seen in a theater. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, for sure.
It's like, there's some movies that's like, okay, for instance, Marriage Story, a movie I just mentioned, like, that is also best experience in the theater. But you know what? If you watch it at home, you're still going to get a great movie.
Yeah, a small, you know, drama seems okay at home, even though I'd always prefer theater. But yeah, sure.
So have you guys seen The Irishman yet?
I have. I saw one of the last New York screenings. Like, I walked in the freezing cold to a theater, basically a half an hour walk away from my house, sat through, you know, 3.5 hours of that movie. It was worth it, for sure. That's definitely a movie you have to see in theater. I wish more people had the chance to do that.
Yeah.
I've not seen it yet. I'm very much looking forward to seeing it. This week was the whole family got the flu, and then we had to travel to Arizona to go to Thanksgiving. It's been a wild ride. So I haven't had 3.5 hours to sit down and watch anything yet. I don't think I will be able to see it in a theater, but the good news is I'll be able to see it with my wife, because we can watch it at home together, and we're not able to go see things out of doors together. Mm-hmm. So that'll be good.
I saw it as part of a friend of mine's birthday celebration. We went to go see it in the theater. And it was, you know, a very, like, it's a great film, in my opinion. It's very good. And I definitely recommend people check it out. I would also say, what was pretty funny was, we saw it, and then I met up with that group again later, a week later. And one of the people from that group said he had seen it that night with us, and then literally had gone back to see it the next day. Which I thought was like, wow, that is commitment for a 3.5 hour film. But, you know, it just goes to show you, like, how strong of emotion that movie provokes. Also hilarious, when we went to go see it the first time, we got there, like, literally 3 minutes late. So we missed the opening 3 minutes of the film. And then my friend, when he went to go see it again, he missed the first 3 minutes again, which is pretty frustrating. But then we, you know, when it came out on Netflix, he got to go see it. We got to finally fill in the blank there with those 3 minutes. But I'd recommend it either in the theater or on Netflix, and we'll review it in a future episode of the podcast. One other thing I think it was Matt Zoller Seitz, I don't remember who it was that said it on Twitter, that I thought was really interesting, was like, isn't it weird that a 3.5 hour movie people find very daunting, but they will binge like 6 hours of a series with no problem whatsoever? You know what I mean? Sure. Like, you don't hear people saying, oh my gosh, I had to binge 6 hours of it. Like, people usually say, like, usually say that with excitement when they're like, oh, I binged like 8 hours. I watched Haunting of Hill House in one day. You know, like, they're usually excited about that. But when it's like The Irishman's 3.5 hours, they're like, oh my gosh, I don't have the time. You know, like,
it's true.
It's so weird.
It's so true. I didn't really think about that, but it's so true. And it's not like, you know, one argument I could imagine people saying is, oh, well, you get a break, you know, you get to, but not with Netflix. You got three seconds.
You just go straight. No, you can't even watch the credits. You go straight into the. Maybe
three
it's the
seconds you get. You can't even reach your remote to stop it from going in that amount of time.
I've thought about this a lot, Jeff, and I think that it's the implied break. It's the option value of break. It's the idea that hey, I know if I want to go take a shit in 30 minutes, I have the ability to do that without interrupting the story. You know what I mean?
You're saying it's all about shitting.
Yes,
is what you're saying.
It's really all about making a sandwich and taking a dump.
Well, I've noticed this with video games as well. You know, there'll be a game like Death Stranding or something that feels like this big meal that you have to sit down to, and I'm like, okay, this is a 40 to 60 hour experience. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to play it. I don't want to. You know what? I'll just play. I can get through a game of Heroes of the Storm and 25 minutes, but I'll play six games of Heroes of the Storm, right? So it is that feeling of like, oh, well, this will be quick. But then at the end of that, I can do one more. I can do one more. I can do one more. So I totally get that. It's a psychological
sense
thing.
There's a sense of accomplishment too, I think. Like, you're actually progressing in a way, whereas like sitting through a very long movie like this, there's a difference, by the way, between doing the 3.5 hour movie in the theater versus at home. Although after Avengers Endgame, I feel like nobody can complain about that anymore. Clearly you can do it.
That's
if
the
you
thing.
Really want to do it.
That's the thing, right? Yeah. Like, Avengers has shown, hey, if you can sit through Avengers Endgame, you can sit through Martin Scorsese's, work of cinema. As it were. So
I have this thing with books too. Like, there are certain books that have either really long chapters or no chapters at all. And I will get so frustrated because I always want to stop at a chapter break.
But if a
book has short chapters, I'll probably read more in a sitting because I'm like, oh, well, there's always another chapter coming up. So I can just read a couple more of these. But if there's a super long chapter, I'm like, oh, when can I stop? I need to be able to get out of here and whenever I want.
You need that momentum.
I need something in between. You know what I mean? Like, because if the chapters are too short, I don't feel like I've accomplished anything. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, that was so quick. I feel like these chapter breaks are just completely arbitrary. You know what I mean? Like, why? Two pages, new chapter. It's like, okay, well.
This is anarchy.
Why, this is anarchy. We live in a society. There are rules here. You know?
You got to read less YA, I guess, Dave.
I think that's true, Jeff.
That's very true.
So
it's a harsh call out there, yeah.
Speaking of things that are extremely purposeful, our next sponsor, TodayTix. Devinder, tell us about TodayTix.
Sure. So I've been trying to figure out how to get tickets to Moulin Rouge in New York City for my wife, and most options are very expensive and hard to get. And then I discovered TodayTix. And they offer discounted tickets to a lot of major shows in New York and a couple other cities now. I found it to be much cheaper than going directly to the theater's websites or some of those resellers you'll find where people tend to jack up the prices. So you can use TodayTix for things like musicals, plays, comedy. And it's great for buying something for yourself. You could buy it as a gift. I gifted it and I wasn't able to join my wife, but she, I sent her the email that had the ticket approval. She went to the concierge in front of the theater and she was able to get right in. So there's also like none of the worries of these scams you may find on Craigslist or other places you find tickets. Like, that's always a big deal. And she saw the show and loved it. So I really love that. I can't wait to use it again. Maybe to see Death of a Salesman here in New York as well. I think it's a great way to start a new tradition, certainly with family members. I can't wait till my family visits New York and I can take them to see Moulin Rouge or something, or Hamilton, or some of the very popular shows. I know it's very basic, but that's what people want to see. And I really appreciate that TodayTix is giving a pretty decent discount compared to some other alternatives out there. So this holiday season, gift an experience your loved ones will remember forever. Steal the show doing it. Go to todaytix.com/filmcast and use code FILMCAST to get $10 off your first TodayTix purchase. That's TodayTix, TodayTix.com/FILMCAST, code FILMCAST for $10 off your first ticket purchase. TodayTix.com/FILMCAST.
That's slash the word FILMCAST, just so people know.
Yes.
Because we are the slash FILMCAST. So it's slash the symbol, the word FILMCAST, just to be clear.
We were poorly titled, yes.
I like that. Now is the time you're bringing that up. We've been saying this for 10 years.
All right. So I also want to mention Marriage Story. Have you guys heard of this movie? This is the new Noah Baumbach film.
Sure.
That I think is on Netflix. Like, by the time you are listening to this podcast episode, it'll be on Netflix, if I'm not mistaken.
I've been waiting for it. I've been dreading this movie after hearing about it. Yeah.
But I'm listening to it right now.
Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. December 6th. So later this week, it'll be on Netflix, right? What were you saying, Jeff Cannata?
Nothing. I made a dumb joke.
Okay. Well, anyway, it is a drama starring Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver. I will just say it's not about a marriage story at all. It's actually about the ending of a marriage. And that is something that is not only the premise of the movie, it's something you find out really in the first 5 minutes of the movie. So I don't consider it a spoiler. I'll just say that this movie is very, very good. It is really what you want to watch this movie for is the two powerhouse performances by these leads. The dialogue and also like the dialogue, which feels very kind of accurate and cutting. But also, this is a movie, strangely, one of the things I take away from this movie is that it has a really great set design. And I know that's like a really weird observation to give about a movie, but like it's rare that I find a movie has like set design that does a lot of the storytelling work. And I feel like this movie does that a lot. And I just wanted to give the set design a shout out.
I feel like that's the thing for Baumbach movies, right? I think of like Squid and the Whale and a couple of the others. Like you know those spaces and like how these people live, you can tell by the books on the wall and the way their furniture, you know, is designed, how expensive their furniture is, things like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
I love his movies. I can't wait to see this. While We're Young is still one of my favorite movies. Ugh, it's so good. Yeah.
Marriage Story will completely hollow you out, and will probably leave you emotionally devastated. So
again, Dave. No, thanks.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, at least I can watch a happy-go-lucky B movie after that, right?
That's right. I would recommend Marriage Story. It's, like, so ridiculously good. And it also, like, straddles a bunch of genres, you know. It's a drama. At times, it's a comedy. It's extremely moving. It's extremely funny. You know, it's a lot of it's, like, one of his best work. One of his favorite movies of mine, and I think it's just super great. So you got to be prepared emotionally, but if you are, then I think it's worth checking out.
Answer me this question. Yes. Did you watch it with your wife?
No, I did not. Would you recommend such a thing.
She's like, after Honeyland, here, honey, come take a look at this.
Yeah.
Is it the kind of thing that you would recommend not watching with my wife?
I mean, you know, here's what I'll say about it. I read something today that really kind of summed it up for me, which was Bilge Ibiri did a list of his best movies of the year, his 10 best movies of the year. Great list. You know, I don't agree with all of them, but he ranked Marriage Story as number 2. And he said, it might be the most human film of the year. Every decision, every word, every emotion feels honest and true to life, but it's also one of the most terrifying. It's sort of a Doctor Strangelove for married couples. You watch it and you think, yeah, this is pretty much how it might all go down.
Nope.
So,
yeah.
You know? So if that's something that interests you, then you should check it out.
Right. Okay.
What are you thinking, Jeff? What's your reaction to that, Jeff?
Well, there's two ways that can work, right? I mean, this is a weird thing to bring up in the context of this movie, but my wife and I very much enjoyed watching the television show Parenthood together in anticipation of being parents, because we kept turning to each other and being like, hey, would you do that? I wouldn't do that. So there's a sense in which some of these kinds of things can make you have conversations that you wouldn't have had otherwise. There's another take that says it just makes you feel terrible. And it sounds like it's the latter thing.
I don't know about that. I guess
staring the abyss in the face and then looking over at your loved one and going, oh, you are that abyss.
Yeah. I mean, kind of, you know,
The perfect chaser to Midsummer, basically. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like, I guess if your marriage is really good, it's like, hey, well, at least we're not going to be these people. You know what I mean? And I will say also that this is pretty perverse what I'm about to say. But
oh boy.
I will say that if your marriage is on the rocks, first of all, I would never recommend watching this with your spouse. Like, so just like that is right out. So I'm going to put that out there. But I will say, like, if your marriage is like, this is actually a good depiction of what a pretty rough divorce is like. And therefore, like, if you want to not have that, it's like potentially you could absorb pointers of how to avoid such a thing.
This is like Scared Straight for divorces.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to be pretty vague about like what happens in the movie, you know, but I'll say that like, basically after I saw the movie, I'm like, you know, I never want to get divorced, but if I do, I'm definitely not doing that. You know, like right. I'm definitely not doing X thing that happened in the movie. You know what I mean? So take that for what you will. So the movie's All Marriage right. Story, it's on Netflix December 6th. It's been your Heart of War. What are you watching this week?
Wow. Speaking of another show about a couple, I guess, on the rocks, I've seen Servant, the M. Night Shyamalan produced Apple TV Plus show. It is about a pair of young professionals who have lost their infant child. And they enlist nanny, a very creepy nanny, to take care of a real doll that's basically posing as the infant, like it's a live infant doll, because the mother had like a psychological break and she needs this thing to stay sane. So this show is a lot, I will say. Shyamalan directed the pilot. It's created by Tony Bascalup, who did the show called Hotel Babylon, a British show like a decade ago. So my wife was really into that. Really weird for him to go from that to this. But I'm really digging it. Like, and I'm watching this with my wife as our baby is sleeping in the bedroom. It is a very, very creepy thing for parents to watch. I think the pilot is really well done. It's this is Shyamalan like using his ability to create suspense through just like characters staring and speaking directly to the camera. Very, very like lingering shots, sweeping camera movements. It's set in this townhouse in Philadelphia, and you really get a sense of the space and how just like creepy and weird it is. There's a lot of body horror.
M. Night Shyamalan movie set in a townhouse in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Imagine that. I'm just really digging it. Like, I miss his like the vibe of his like Sixth Sense stuff. It is very deliberate like that. He didn't direct everything, but it feels like his pilot kind of set the tone for the entire show. I think it's really well written because it is, I'm not going to say what happens, but something very freaky happens very soon in the show that really makes you question the nature of reality in this world and how like this couple is perceiving reality. It is something. I'm really into the mystery of the show. So my wife and I have seen the first three episodes. I guess they're going to be coming weekly at this point. That's how Apple TV is doing it. It is definitely one of the more interesting Apple TV Plus shows I've seen. So I'd highly recommend it if you're into the weird Shyamalan suspense stuff. If you're very squeamish about bad things happening to babies, maybe hold off for a bit.
So between the, you know, children getting injured in Honeyland to the marriage dissolving in Marriage Story to horrible things happening to infants in the Servant this week.
Yeah, our show is basically a warning label. That's what our show is this week.
Definitely also, a full suite of good,
If you're not, you know, squeamish about bad things happening to babies, maybe get some help because I think you should be. I think everybody should be.
It's more like certainly and this is one of those things, right? I feel like if you're a parent and certainly if you're a new parent, you feel this very acutely, the sort of like connection to the child and the sort of like the way the entire world is kind of constructed to hurt your child. It is a weird sense of being. It's just like basically always being on edge, always being anxious about something happening to your baby. But this show escalates that completely.
You know, speaking of children in terrible situations. So first of all, the show is Servant that you're watching. It's on Apple TV Plus. It's one episode out right now, right?
It's three episodes up right now.
Oh, three episodes out. And I think new episodes every Friday. Is that right?
I think
Yeah. Anyway, I will say, like, I actually want to check this out based on your description of it. So
it's really, I think, at least watch the pilot, because I think the pilot is a really good encapsulation of Shyamalan suspense.
This
and I think it ends in a way where you were like, oh, I gotta see where this goes.
I love the things that pique your interest, Dave.
Yep.
Oh, it'll make me uncomfortable on a fundamental level. I gotta tune into that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the idea of this somebody having like a real doll kid because they have it's just like, wow, like
such a Dave Chen story. So like, will it make me feel weird for the rest of the day? Oh, I gotta watch that.
It will. It certainly will.
Well, this is the first thing. So Apple TV Plus has this thing where you're like, if you've purchased an Apple device recently, you get a whole year of Apple TV Plus for free, right?
Yeah.
And I have like held off on activating that thing because I'm like, I have to wait to activate this until there's something I really like want to watch, and then I can have like a year from that point forward. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think this is going to tip me over, Devendra. I think this is
it.
It's worth it.
Well, this and Dickinson is also a lot of fun.
Hmm. All right. Well, between those two things, that'll be that. So anyway, the show is Servant. I had a whole... Oh, yeah. That's right. Okay, so I had this whole other thing I watched this week that I forgot to mention, which is I had a chance to see Brightburn this week. Have you guys heard of that movie, Brightburn?
Yeah.
This is the...
Did you get the 99 cent iTunes deal?
I got the 99 cent iTunes rental for Brightburn. And it's basically, what if Superman, but he's evil, right? That's the whole movie. So basically, if you find, Avengers Endgame and Spider-Man Far From Home and all that stuff too hopeful, it's too hopeful. It's too cheerful. It's too quippy. It's too glib. You want something that's way more bleak, way more unsettling set in the superhero universe, then that's Brightburn. That's basically what I have to say about it. Now, Jeff, when I tweeted about this, I got some responses that there's basically some comic books that are like this, right? There's some books that imagine this, basically, right?
Oh, yeah, a bunch of them.
Do you enjoy those comic books?
Well, there are a lot across the board of that. I'm a big fan of J. Michael Straczynski's Supreme, which is basically all of the Justice League and their questionable motives. I think Mark Millar did is it called Nemesis? Is that the one?
Yeah, something like that. The one that's like about the Batman Joker thing.
There's one. He did one that is basically what if Superman but evil.
Yeah,
And it's just brutal. And I think there's a couple of Garth Ennis.
There's also one called Irredeemable. Is what was brought up to me. Irredeemable by Mark Waid.
Yeah. Oh, Irredeemable. Yeah. Yes. Irredeemable. Very good. Very good. Yes. That is a companion book with some Invincible and Irredeemable is quite good. Also, The Boys is basically that.
Yeah.
Jeff, before we get the correction, Nemesis is What If Batman Was the Joker? I remember that.
Oh,
premise.
Right. Yeah.
Because I wrote it up for slashfilm.com 10 years ago, I think, when they were trying to make a TV series. That's how I remember it.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is not a new idea, certainly, but is Brightburn does it well?
It does it okay. You know, so basically this kid like gets superpowers and he likes like fucking with people before he kills them. You know what I mean? So he's kind of like an asshole monster character, like, you know, in a horror film. And, you know, one of the people early on that he kind of has marked for death gets like this piece of glass stuck in her eye and there's like a close up on it. And I'm just like, you know what? I think I'm done. I think I don't need to watch the rest of this movie. I mean, I actually skipped to the end.
Throw a baby into some bees. I'm down. But...
throw a baby into some bees and make it a real true life story, and I'm game. But like, you know, fake glass stuck in actor's eye. No, thank you.
Everybody's got to have a line, Dave.
That's right.
That's yours.
That's right. I thought it was fine. I thought it's just It's just not a headspace I care to inhabit, Jeff. Okay? All right?
Fair enough.
That's
Fair
all
enough,
I'm saying. Man. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, you don't have to talk to me about eye stuff. Believe me.
Indeed, indeed. All right. Well, anyway, that's Servant. That's what Devendra's been watching this week.
I will say we're talking about our next sponsor now. I'm not a person that has ever in my life had a balance on my credit card. I pay it off every month. And I would highly, highly encourage people to do that. If you are running a balance, you probably recognize what an insane APR your credit card is giving you. There are credit card interest rates, 15, 20% APRs. That's insane. Why would you want to pay 20% more for everything you bought on your credit card? It's crazy to me. Well, we have a sponsor called Lightstream that offers a way to deal with that. You can refinance your credit card balances and get a much lower rate. You can save with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream, and you can get a rate with good credit. You can get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with auto pay. So that's a much lower rate than what you're probably getting on your credit card. And it's a way for you to get out from under all that debt. And just for the listeners of Slash Filmcast, if you apply now, you can get an additional interest rate discount. And the only way to get that discount is to go to lightstream.com/filmcast. That's lightstream.com/filmcast for an additional discount. lightstream.com/filmcast. It's subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/filmcast for more information.
We also want to thank our donors for the podcast this week. Thanks to Scott Lombardi, who made a big donation this week. And he writes, "Thank you for being my favorite podcast for as long as I can remember. And to my wife, Caitlin, for putting up with you, or as she calls you, my imaginary friends." I think that's awesome. The first time we've been described as imaginary friends. That I kind of like imaginary sure. kind of implies that we are not real people. But I think she just
not
means,
real to him.
I think just, yeah. she just means like we're not really his friends. You know, like we're that his friendship with us is imaginary. And it's not we don't have anything against you, Scott. We just don't even know who you are. Other than that, you are an extremely generous donator to the podcast. So,
and you know what? Because you donated, you're my real life friend.
Yeah. So tell
take
Caitlin,
that Conan O'Brien.
Tell Caitlin, you are now our real life friends, Scott Lombardi.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thanks also to new subscriber Justin Evans for his monthly recurring donation. If you want to donate to the Slash Filmcast, help us defray the cost of doing the show, go to paypal.me/filmcast. That's paypal.me/filmcast. And we never want you to donate if it in any way causes you hardship, but if you do have some extra cash, we'd really appreciate it. And if you want to support us for free, it's super easy. Just go to Apple Podcasts, leave a review for the Slash Filmcast or a star rating. It just takes a few seconds, and it does really help. Thanks a lot to all of our donors. Let's get to our review of Knives Out.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to request that you all stay until the investigation is completed.
What? Can we ask why? Has something changed?
No.
No, it hasn't changed, or no, we can't ask.
I'm gonna live till I die.
You think one of his family
Walls.
Killed? Is that what you're suggesting?
You all love twisting the knife into one another.
Up your ass.
Oh, very nice.
Matter of fact,
oh, God.
Eat shit. How's that? Shit. Eat shit. Nice. Eat shit.
Slap
eat shit.
Smug smile.
Definitely eat shit.
Gonna fly. I'm taking chance. Right on. Oh. All my numbers up. I'm gonna fill my cup. I'm gonna live.
You know something. Spill it.
I suspect foul play. I have eliminated no suspects.
That was from the trailer for Knives Out, the newest film written and directed by Rian Johnson. I'm going to read the plot summary from IMDb. A detective investigates the death of a patriarch of an eccentric, combative family. So, Rian Johnson, really bold original filmmaker. He's been a guest on the Slash Filmcast for every film he's made since Brothers Bloom, and has a unique career going from Brick, Brothers Bloom, Looper to The Last Jedi, and then now to a smaller film, A Whodunit, which is of a kind that we don't usually see in theaters very often anymore. Devendra Hardwar, curious about what you thought of Knives Out.
You know, in short, it may be my favorite movie I've seen in theaters this year.
Whoa!
I completely adore this movie. I don't know if it's just the way Rian Johnson writes. Like, his dialogue is always so, like, you know, it is whip smart. I love his characters. I love how, like, artfully constructed this entire movie is, because when you're doing something like this, when you're making a whodunit, all the little pieces really have to fit together. Like, reveals later on kind of have to click into things you've seen earlier. And also, like, for something like this, I'm thinking of movies like Clue as well, and, like, you know, the Agatha Christie type mysteries. Like, you want these characters, if you're going to be juggling, like, a ton of characters, you want them all to be interesting and distinct in different ways, and I think they all are. But what I really love, too, is that this movie is just, like, it is sort of like Rian Johnson's take on something like Parasite. It is such a perfect reflection of class inequality. Like, it is making some bold statements, and I think it may be handling some things bluntly. I've seen some criticism about that, but I cannot be any more happy that he is swinging for the fences with these types of big ideas in a big mystery like this. And we'll certainly get to those in spoilers. But yeah, I loved this movie. I could spend hours more. I was sitting at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, which is a quick ride here from my house, and they have some of the worst theater seats in the city. But I love it because I'm a member and I get really cheap tickets. I would have gladly sat in those cramped seats in an auditorium where it's like 300 seats and there's no middle aisle. So when you're sitting in the middle, you just can't escape and use the bathroom. I would have sat there for many, many more hours just to live in this world, just to see these characters, just to hear Daniel Craig's, like, various whatever is on his mind. Like, he fully embodies this great, like, Southern fried detective character. I love everything about it. I cannot wait to watch this movie again.
All right. Devendra, a big fan of Knives Out. Jeff Cannata, your thoughts?
Well, Dave, I guess my thoughts about Knives Out can best be summed up in the form of a limerick. With suspects acting suspicious and a plot that is truly ambitious, each scene is a morsel to be savored. So, of course, I'll be the one to call this movie delicious.
Yes.
Of course.
Delicious.
Of course, Jeff. Of course. Nicely yeah. done.
Of course.
Of course.
Done. Yeah.
Nicely done.
You know that thing where you're eating something and then you, like, each one of your fingers, you go like, yeah. Like, you got to get every little bit off the end of your fingers because it's so good. You're like there's like a you get like a sponge cake or something and there's just like a little bit left on your finger and you're just like, I gotta get
you start licking the plate and yes. Like, yeah it gets embarrassing. Yeah,
that's the experience of this movie for me. I am right there with you, Devendra. It is, if not the best movie or my favorite movie of the year, it's going to be jostling for that position. I first of all love this genre. I love this genre when it's done well. I love movies like Sleuth. Clue is one of my favorite films of all time. I love a finely crafted, twisty, turny, funny murder mystery. I love them. I'm such a fan of when these are done well. A parlor mystery, you know, where it's like we're all in a room. Somebody did it. Who is it? Everybody's got a motive, you know. I love that just as a genre. And clearly, Rian Johnson loves it as a genre, too, because this movie is a love letter to that genre. But it completely throws things on its head. We'll get to how in spoilers. But there is so much fun. I just lived on every word of this movie. I just hung on trying to see where it was taking me and all the little nuggets of clues and dropped hints. And is this movie, did that just happen? Okay, No. There's no way that that actually happened. Wait, the movie is definitely telling me that happened. Ooh, what's it? I mean, that it is such a fun ride to go on. The actors are clearly having a great time in this movie as well. They get to do some really fun things. Toni Collette in particular is just having a ball, you know, kind of skewering Gwyneth Paltrow a bit. But all the actors, all the characters are so broadly drawn, but specific and so so fun. They're just everybody's chewing scenery. The movie itself is chewing dialogue, and it indulges in flourishes that are just there to have a great time. It's funny. It's interesting. But as Devendra kind of referenced as well, the best thing about this movie, the thing that put it over the top from being just a fun experience and just a really satisfying mystery into something truly special and best of the year caliber for me, is that it's also about something. It's a movie that says your ideology isn't what makes you a good person, that there are people on both sides of the ideological spectrum that are shitty. What makes you a good person is being a good person. And that seems to me what this movie is about. It's saying, hey, it's so interesting, like coming out of The Last Jedi, when this filmmaker was sort of at the heart of all of this nonsense that we live through as a culture now, to have him say like, hey, the most important thing is not where you stand on any of these positions. It's just be good, be decent, be a decent person. And this movie is full-throated in that. It made me tear up because of that message. And I adore it. I adore the fact that this movie, even for all its tongue-in-cheek and wink and nod and fun playfulness that it has, it also wears its heart on its sleeve and is earnest and beautiful. And I cannot recommend this movie higher. I just don't understand anybody that couldn't have an absolute blast with this movie, because it's so much fun.
Well, I'll say I quite enjoyed the film as well, and I agree. It's just great to see a movie that is kind of not like what we normally see in theaters. It's not based on a pre-existing property. It's not a superhero film, right? It's like, hey, it's a self-contained mystery. There's probably not going to be a sequel to it. It's just a bunch of really well-respected actors.
Hey, now, do not curse the sequel to this movie, because I want to see more Benoit Blanc.
You want to see the adventures mysteries of Benoit Blanc. I mean,
maybe teaming up with Mr. Joe Bang from what was that movie? The Soderbergh one. Like, that is, imagine those two. Imagine them being at, like, lost brothers at birth or something. Oh man.
Yeah, I mean, I think just so you know, like, my wife is one of the biggest fans of Agatha Christie I know. For, I think it was Christmas, I don't remember, for one, like, you know, big gift occasion, I purchased I think it was like 55 discs of Hercule Poirot DVD set, which is like Agatha Christie's greatest detective. I got her the definitive, the complete cases collection, which contains 25 years and 33 discs worth of mysteries. And I used Handbrake to manually rip every single one so that they could be stored
wow.
on like, you know, her iOS devices and such. So she could watch them like on train trips and such. And so she's like enormous. She literally screamed when I told her that we were going to go see this movie, because I surprised her with us going to see it. And so her opinion of it was like kind of my acid test for how good it was. And she really enjoyed
sure
it.
Are you sure that she didn't just scream because you weren't going to see some horrible B movie?
I mean, I can't. You keep saying B movie. When you say B movie, Jeff, you mean BEE movie, correct?
Of course. What other connotations?
Also,
are
the Jerry Seinfeld B movie.
Yeah, literally. Or it could be Jerry Seinfeld's B movie, Jeff. So, yeah. In any case,
sorry.
No worries. But I think probably like the the greatest piece of, like, the thing that kind of tickles me when I think of this movie is the fact that the main character, or the main detective character, his name is Benoit Blanc. So it's kind of like, oh, he's kind of like a French person, like Hercule Poirot, who's also the world's greatest detective. But he has a like Cajun Southern accent in this movie, which means he's from the South, which is just like a delightful kind of reversal of that.
Well, no, no. If he's from like Louisiana or something.
Yeah, no, it's,
like,
it's conceivable that it's conceivable that his name would be Benoit Blanc. I'm not saying like it's completely out of nowhere, but it's just funny that
sir, have you forgotten about Remy LeBeau? Come on.
You're right in that there is definitely nothing ridiculous about Benoit Blanc.
But it's just funny that you know that like it's clearly like built up to be this big character. He has a French name, but like you I think you might expect him to have a French accent, and he's played by Daniel Craig, an English person. So it's like that part of the movie I think is just endlessly delightful. And he also
I think it's Southern Daniel Craig. There is a certain charm to it that I really enjoy.
What's fascinating about it too is it's a different Southern Daniel Craig than was in Logan Lucky.
Yes.
Like, that was a very distinctly different. I mean, the guy knows how to do a Southern accent. I would say he does a much better Southern. He does a much
crossover.
He does a much better Southern accent than many American actors do British accents.
Yes.
But what I love about this movie also is that, like, yeah, it's just a great execution of the mystery genre. But as you said, Jeff, it does introduce some pretty moralistic ideas and some. You know, this is, I don't know. I can't really talk about it without getting into spoilers. So I'll just avoid some of the more finer plot details other than just to say I quite enjoyed it. And I think there's a bunch of like red herrings, like you said, Jeff, there's a bunch of moments where like, is what is being shown on screen what actually happened? Mm-hmm. You know, like,
yeah,
it's so great though. It's like, no, there's no way that that's really true. And then the movie's like, no, seriously, it's super true. And you're like, but really? Because it doesn't seem like it would be true. And then the movie's like, nope, definitely very, very true.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's so fun. It's like it's having a conversation with you because the movie seems to acknowledge those doubts and then doubles down on them throughout. You know, it's so great.
Yeah.
It subtly like proves how smart it is, basically, like as it goes on. I love it.
It feels kind of like Shaun of the Dead, you know, kind of was in some ways a parody of the zombie genre, but was also a great entry into it. This is less kind of overtly silly than that film, in my opinion.
Right.
I mean, I love Shaun of the Dead. I think it's a brilliant
film. It's also less silly than Clue.
Right. Like, it mostly is played straight for the most part. And so, but it is kind of like, hey, I'm going to remix this genre just a little bit, just a tiny bit, but also be like a great entry in the genre as well. Like, it has all the conventions that we've come to expect from this kind of thing. Many red herrings, many things that you can't, like many characters you can't trust. Everyone has a motive. You know, one of the things, like one of my favorite episodes of Futurama ever features Zoidberg playing a Sherlock Holmes type character. And at the end of that episode, he says something like, I have gathered you all into the accusing parlor while I slowly solve the crime, you know? And that's just like, that line is just like, you know, clearly written by character, like somebody who loves this genre and knows all about it and kind of wants you to enjoy it, like wants to expose you to their love of the genre as well. And that's kind of how I felt watching this movie. Is like this.
Well, it's so clear because there's references to all kinds of other mysteries. Every character, anytime a television is on, people are watching mysteries. The movie's about an author of mysteries. It clearly is just a love letter to these kinds of tales. But it's so smart. I mean, I hope Ryan comes on the show again because I have so many questions for him about this movie. But it is. I don't understand how you can. It can be this well structured and every little thing is beautifully paid off. And yet I was still completely surprised by the outcome. It's high quality murder mystery stuff, but also, you know, self-aware and sort of postmodern in its take on murder mystery.
Yeah. Yeah. I also love that this movie is the sort of thing where I think somebody watching this can be like, I need more of this. I need more of this drug. And it can set them on the path of like, you know, pursuing more of this genre and kind of discovering the Agatha Christie stuff. So I think that alone is like a true accomplishment.
All right, let's get to spoilers for Knives Out starting right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
You're going to see this coming.
No.
But you won't find it because, of course,
you're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret now.
You want to be fooled.
I want to say, Dave, that one of my favorite things about this movie is, and I don't know that this was in Ryan's head when he wrote it, but it certainly seems like it could have been this idea of, what if you have a Poirot or a Sherlock Holmes style super sleuth, but you're rooting against them the whole time? Mm-hmm. You know, like what if you're hoping that they don't solve the case?
Because they give us the glimpse into, like, oh no, this could be entirely this person's fault, and we really like this person.
Yeah.
So that is something. Yeah.
I love that take on it, where, you know, it's like, oh no, for one time you're rooting against the super sleuth to come up with the solution. Because the movie is like, no, this is legit what happened. And you keep going, well, it can't be, right? Because we like this person and she's kind of our protagonist. And
yeah. Was she even in the like, you guys haven't seen the trailers, I guess, but I don't think they showed Ana de Armas at all, like, in the promotion of this movie. It was all the family.
I watched the trailer. Yeah, she was certainly a minor part of it, if so. I think, so, she's
like,
also...
the entire, like, pitch of this movie was basically fresh, because the trailers just showed the family.
Yeah.
So how much of this movie were you guys thinking, oh, he's not really dead?
So what happens is, when he first finds out the drugs have been injected into him, he is so cool and collected.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. I thought, like, okay, you know, maybe he's planned this whole thing out. But then I'm like, wait, and that's probably what Ryan Johnson wants me to think. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and also he's a author of this kind of thing.
Right.
He's clearly been pulling the strings like a puppet master for his family for a long time. Is this his magnum opus, was to, like, put them inside a mystery when he's not even really dead? But then the movie keeps showing you new things of, like, no, he's super dead, you guys.
Well, there's a scene where it shows him, like, cutting his throat.
Yeah.
And then
I'm like, oh, well, prop knife. We've talked about prop knives and fake blood. You know, like, I'm doing all the mental gymnastics in my head of, like, where's the twist about him not being dead? And then the movie's like, no, blood splatters, like, mortician. Oh, you know, he's super dead. And I'm like, really, movie? Because it certainly seems like he shouldn't be dead, especially because you said it's her fault. And
yes.
He can't really be dead, right? Right, movie? I love that process in my head. And the movie's like, no, definitely very, very dead.
Yeah. I can just imagine, like, Ryan sitting in a corner and just cackling as the audience, like, is feeling morally conflicted about what's happening. It's like, we want Marta to be okay. She was involved in something bad, not entirely her fault. Like, how do we make this okay? That is the entire push and pull of this movie. It is so good. Delicious is the word you use, Jeff. And I feel like that was it. I felt a rush for this entire movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really well put together. All of Ryan Johnson movies look good. Their cinematographer is Steve Yedlin. Nathan Johnson did the music for this one as well. I mean, it's just like, the overall package of the movie is very compelling. And I think you're right, Jeff, about kind of what the message of the movie is that, hey, these characters have a wide array of, like, they fit on the whole spectrum of how good they are as people. Right.
Right.
But in the
ideologically
end,
too, they are a broad spectrum of ideological.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Know. But at the end of the day, like, what you say you are and how you portray yourself to the world, it's not as important as what your actions say, right? And that's
right.
One of the messages of the film. I thought it was interesting. You know, I read Monica Castillo. She wrote an op-ed or opinion piece in the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
that I'll link to in the show notes. She had an interesting take on the movie that I think is worth hearing. It's entitled "Why I Left Knives Out with Emotional Whiplash." What it's like to watch a movie in which your greatest fears are played for giggles. And, you know, she's talking about how, like, the character of Marta is, like, threatened. Her and her family are, like, threatened with deportation. And then they're kind of like, the white people in the movie are like, oh, yeah, she's from Ecuador. She's from Bolivia. Obviously, it's meant to indict them as, like, kind of being racist, in the sense that they don't.
Even the ones who don't maybe consider themselves rapists too. Like, right, I think interesting part there.
Correct. In the sense
I mean, you don't even have to go to the R word. You can just say they're just sort of self-interested assholes who can't be bothered to learn the truth. They only, you know, they're not even interested enough to pay attention to what is actually the real answer there.
Sure. I mean, it's still relevant because she is a different R word.
Yeah.
But in any case, it's worth reading. I'm not going to litigate it with you guys here on the show because it's not my perspective. But I think it's basically like these characters deny the character of Marta any kind of interiority or individuality, but that the movie doesn't really give her that individual. Like, I don't think you ever find out where she's actually from. In the course of the film. And so, like, the movie is kind of, like, hypocritical in that sense. So I'd recommend you check out the piece, but it was an interesting perspective. And also the fact that, like, for whom, like, the threat of deportation is a constant menace every day, I can understand why watching this movie would not be enjoyable. Anyway, it's just a perspective that's worth it. It's not one that I considered when I was watching the movie. I mean, I had the same experience as you all, which is had a great time. And I was like, oh, you know, the turns of phrase and, you know, the twists of the plot are so delightful. And I was just like, I was like,
it's worth mentioning that piece, Dave. Like, I think it's a good perspective too. And I will say, like, once they started bringing up immigration in this movie, I was like, oh, so he's going there. He's doing something. Yeah, with it. And I do think like that is dangerous, right? If you bring that up and you handle it sloppily, or if you're just like, if you're using it as like a weapon against this character and it's just sort of like clumsy, I feel like that can easily turn people off. I can certainly see why, you know, it may make you feel uncomfortable. I'll say like, I
don't know. Spectre, let me just say, that's a good point, Devendra. I'll just say, I don't know that it's clumsy so much as like,
no, I'm not saying it is.
Right.
I'm not
I don't know that he has much to say about, like, it is just another weapon. Like, for the characters in the movie, I think the threat of deportation is just another weapon that they use against this character, right? And that, like, I think the movie has more to say about what, like, the overall morals of the character and also, like, potentially their illusory politics, right, than it does about immigration as an issue specifically.
Yeah, for sure. Right? It's sort of like the Get Out thing, where even people who are presenting themselves as like well-meaning, like, I think as soon as Jamie Lee Curtis was like, oh yeah, we think of you as family, we'll always take care of you, he's like, I don't trust her. And then it turns out like even like the sort of like better ones, like Toni Collette's character is probably one of the better ones, even though she's sort of like pretending to be like a Gwyneth Paltrow type character. She will, you know, she just as easily turned on Marta. Her daughter did. Her daughter, who is probably like the person closest to Marta, will reveal that fact to the family. It shows like the vulnerability of like privilege, of how like people who will believe one thing about themselves, when pushed to the limit, will completely act in self-interest. What I was going to say, I really like that piece by Monica. I also kind of grew up with the specter of immigration and dealing with that. Like, people in my family have had to go back to my home country. My mom had to go back when I was a kid for a while, for several months, just to clear up immigration issues. So the current state of the world we're in right now too is like terrifying to me, because I know just how easily you can be taken away from this country. And to me, on my side, it certainly seemed like that made it even scarier, of how like these people can just like juggle with the lives of immigrants so easily without basically caring a second thought. So I found it powerful in that respect. But yeah, it doesn't really make a broader statement on immigration or anything like that.
Yeah, I think the broader statement is about what you said, Devendra. Also, like, it's very much about privilege, right? There's a scene in the movie where Michael Shannon kind of says, hey, like, says to Marta, hey, we've all been talking it over and we think, you know, we're going to take care of you. You're part of the family. And boy, does that turn real quick when true nature of the will is revealed. And it's like, by the way, she's getting everything and she gets to decide who's like, quote unquote, part of the family. Then it's like, hey, basically he only was saying that because he had power, or he thought he had power in that situation. Mm-hmm. Right. And he thought he had the power and the privilege. And once that was removed, it's like, okay, Now, not only do I not feel that way, I'm going to try to remove the power and privilege from the person who I think is undeserving. And yeah, I think the movie does a great job of kind of making that point. So I think it's more sharp on some things than others, certainly. Let me ask you guys this, like, what did you think of the actual reveal, right? Like, that of like what actually happened, you know, the question.
First of all, the donut monologue is a work of art. The donut within a donut, the donut hole within the donut, like as that kept so going, good. As it kept building up, it felt like the people in my theater, it was pretty much a sold out theater. Like everybody was clapping. Everybody was cackling. Like this movie got everybody right at that moment. But yeah.
Yeah. And to me, the central idea that she is so experienced and skilled that she would instinctively take the more or less viscous solution without even paying attention to the labels. It's such a beautiful
twist.
It's such a beautiful turn of that. Like that's, of course she wouldn't poison him. She is been doing this too long to just rely on the labels. That's not, you're beyond labels at a certain point. And I thought that was exquisite. And I didn't see it coming at all. That little nugget of information. And I don't know. This movie had me so completely from start to finish. It's so great. It's so great.
Did you, so I think the reveal ultimately being right that Chris Evans has been deceiving everyone, right? Like he's kind of the one that's most like they're all culpable in some way, but like,
well, the father like did kill himself,
right?
But then then all this other stuff happened. And actually, I think from that first scene, like from the first flashback to what happened that night, that's initially what I thought that happened. Like, oh, this guy hates his family. He hates all of them. He hates like this situation he's built, like these undeserving children who don't know the value of a dollar, basically, because they've never actually built anything for themselves, even though they keep saying they do. This movie entirely hinged on that. So I consider the possibility that he had faked his death, but it seemed more powerful if like, no, this is the way he wants to go out, and he wants to go out by giving the only good person in his life, you know, all the power. But the basically all the other stuff, the Chris Evans stuff, it seems like that was pretty foretold, like given how close he was to her, like how basically we've learned not to trust anybody in that family. But it was certainly well done in terms of how he actually did it.
Yeah, I mean, I eat all that kind of stuff up of like when it's like they're explaining what he did and the flashbacks and everything like that. There's actually an episode of Rick and Morty that happened this week that is about heist movies.
Yeah.
It's the more about
movie. That ruins every heist movie forever.
It's more about heist movies than about con movies or mystery, you know, murder mysteries, which this I would say this is. What did you make of the fact that Marta gets super sick anytime she tells a lie? I thought that was an interesting. I don't know if that's based off of something
It is a real thing. People have published articles about it, or at least it is a real condition where your body can react involuntarily to things like that, to stressful situations. So maybe you could stretch it to lying. It is symbolically showing like, oh, man, she is so pure. She is so honest that she can literally never tell a lie because people will always know. It seems like a convenient thing, but it also fits that character. It seems to work.
It's just an interesting mechanic to introduce into the, like it's like I've seen I feel like I've seen I haven't seen like hundreds of mysteries I feel like I've seen like I don't know a dozen or a couple dozen of mysteries and I've never seen the mechanic of like one of the characters can't lie, you know what I mean? I just thought that was like an interesting way of like going about that, because it's like, oh, a new variable into the mix that
it's so great. Great, you have the person that you most want to lie incapable of doing so. And it's a stress point that you put on the person you're rooting for throughout the story, which is great. And also it's hilarious at the end when she finally does, you know, projectile vomit into his face. that we're all cheering that the woman actually is dead. We're like, yes, she was dead. She did die from her injuries. Yay, Marta didn't save her. Wait, what?
She tried. You know, that's yeah, all he that does matters.
Get, yeah, he does get goes to jail for murder because she's dead.
Indeed. So, anyway.
Also, shout out to
kind of a dark reveal there. You're right, Jeff.
Yeah. Kind of a dark reveal. Shout out to the surprise Frank Oz reveal in this movie. Oh, you like who? Dude, love it. Whenever this guy so appears good. In anything, I will instantly love it. Yeah,
he was so great. And his assistant, who has like no lines, but is you know, very few lines, but is yeah, it's such a wonderful, you know, helping him
it's
out.
A physical
and
then, like, comedy role.
Yeah,
basically, like she walks in carrying later. A ton of. Yeah. She walks in carrying a ton of papers, like taller than herself, and yeah, then she's the one sleeping in the background. Love
so
it.
So good. Indeed. So good. And there's so many wonderful framing things. I mean, all the stuff with the dog bringing the piece of wood constantly, yeah, or, you know, all of that stuff. It's delicious. It's a delicious experience of just like, oh my God, this is happening now.
It's the mud path. The mud path. Like when that was revealed, I was like, oh, how is she going to get out of this situation? Ow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like watching someone assemble a Rube Goldberg machine and yes, then set it into motion. You know, like that's what it is. Every single piece that's introduced early matters. I love that they just made things easier for you when they're introducing all the characters. They put like the name right on the screen next to them. And it's just like
that
okay,
sequence where they're all having the same interview, but yeah, saying the different, it's so beautifully cut together. Yep, and yes, yeah, it's great.
It's a great movie. Check it out. A lot of people are enjoying it right now and having fun with it. And definitely a movie you could also take the family to. I have a feeling a lot of Thanksgiving families went to go see this movie. So
I hope so.
Yeah.
And I must say, guys, are we officially in a Don Johnnessance?
I hope so. Between Watchmen and this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great in both. So hope he can. I mean, we are in a Don Johnnessance in the same way we are in a Jamie Lee Curtis-sance, right?
Yeah.
Curtis-sance.
I guess, so what is that? Halloween and what else?
This?
Movie? This? That's the only two things? That's yeah, the best sance? I guess
I mean, you just tried to assance Don Johnson for Watchmen and this, so.
Yeah, I just feel like an ongoing series is maybe more more sancy. But, you know, two good movies in the span of.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, Don Johnson was in many, many episodes of Watchmen as a major character. So I see what your logic is there, Jeff.
I've only watched the one, Dave. Is he not in the show anymore?
Did you watch the entire episode?
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, anyway, that's a good point.
Anyway.
All right, I'm not giving Jamie Lee Curtis her due. Fair enough. But when was Halloween? Was like 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
It was in 2018, Jeff.
I'm not trying to slight Jamie Lee Curtis. I love me some Jamie Lee Curtis. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Also, she's in Veronica Mars in 2014, and she's going to be in the next Halloween movie, Halloween Kills, in 2020. So
sweet.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So the Curtisance is upon us as well. Anyway. All right. Well, that's going to bring us into this week's episode of the Slash Filmcast. Find more episodes at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from adamwarrock.com. Our spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker Kyle Hillinger. And this episode was edited by Baby Zhang. Stay tuned to hear what we'll be discussing next week on the podcast. In the meantime, Jeff Cannata, where can I find more of your work on the internet?
Well, you can always follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I also do a video game podcast called DLC, which you can find at 5by5.tv/DLC. Fun show. You should check it out. Also, last week I did a guest appearance on Screen Drafts podcast, where we like drafted the best sword and sorcery movies. It was fun. You should check that out. And that reason I did that was to promote a show I'm doing called The Dungeon Run, which is my live play Dungeons & Dragons show I'm super proud of. It is a big fantasy storytelling writ large. But don't take my word for it. Listen to this review that was posted from a Slash Filmcast listener on the podcast version of The Dungeon Run. It's titled A Convert Is Made. This is from Yogini Nurse. I'm not a D&D fan and was only curious because I like listening to Jeff and his movie review podcast, the Slash Filmcast.
Nice. But nailed it.
Yeah, but I'm hooked on the dungeon run. So professionally done and enthralling to follow. I marathoned the first 5 episodes last night. Sleep was secondary. Looking forward to the rest. Thank you. If you're listening, Yogini Nurse, thank you for posting that review. Thank you for listening to the Dungeon Run. You can be like Yogini Nurse. All you got to do is listen to it as an audio show, audio podcast, wherever you get podcasts, Dungeon Run. Or check out the YouTube. All the episodes are on YouTube. If you search for The Dungeon Run, or you can watch it live when we record Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific time at caffeine.tv/The Dungeon Run.
All right. Devendra Hardware, how about you?
Or you can find me on Twitter at Devendra. I write about tech at Engadget.com. I'm also doing the Engadget podcast there. So check that out.
If you want to hear me interview the composer for Knives Out, Nathan Johnson, check out Culturally Relevant, my new interview podcast at culturallyrelevantshow.com. Next week, we'll be discussing The Irishman, or Irishman, as I believe.
It's a superhero movie, right?
Irishman. It's on Netflix right now.
Scorsese's only doing superhero movies from now on.
That's what I heard. Yeah. It's on Netflix right now. It's 3.5 hours long. Check it out. And we will be discussing it next week on the podcast. Until then, we'll see you later on the Slash Week.